this church, so it's kind of a couple advantages. Get to meet some of you as a congregation, get to see your facility here, and looks like you got a good thing going. Attendance is looking good. Mike said it's growing. Good work. Keep shining the light in this corner of the world. As was said already, my topic is finances. And as I asked them to divulge a little bit on the verses that I was given, they said specifically finances and preparing for the future. So I read the verses and I'm looking at it, and hopefully this evening, as we dig into the key verses, the text that I've been given, we can all be encouraged in our Christian walks as we manage the finances that God has entrusted to us. As we think about the idea of finances and preparing for the future, my mind went to the story of the hare and the tortoise. Not a story that is unfamiliar, I believe, to most of us. So let me just read the poem in case you forget. Once there lived a boastful hare who craved for glory everywhere. No triumph or trophy ever filled his need. He raced for fame, driven by greed. A gentle tortoise, calm and wise, saw joy in life, no need for prize. When challenged by the hare one day, he smiled and softly said, "Okay." The starting cry rang through the air. The greedy hare sped without care. He dreamed of riches he would claim, rewards and cheers to crown his name. With all my speed, what can I lose? A nap is something I can choose. With visions of praise and gold, he drifted off and his dreams took hold. But on the path, the tortoise moved. With steady steps, his pace was proved. He savored each and every mile, unhurried, peaceful, and with a smile. He had no wish to win or boast, content with every step almost. While hare still slept beneath the tree, the tortoise moved on patiently. The hare awoke. His heart now sore. The tortoise neared the finish floor. He dashed ahead, desperate to win, but found the race was lost to him. The tortoise crossed with even pace, a gentle smile upon his face. In his sleep, the hare gambled away what he thought would bring a better payday. The lesson is that greed brings loss and strife. Contented diligence leads to a richer life. You know, so I talk about the story of the hare and the tortoise this evening because we know that story. We know that...
I'm sorry, we're having a difficulty. Can I...
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Just flip it on.
It's on, it's good to go. Yeah. All right. Can you hear me? I need to move up. All right. Tell the story of the hare and the tortoise, because to us it's familiar. We know the tortoise plodded along and eventually won the race. As we talk about finances tonight, I am not implying that our finances are a race. Sometimes we can feel like they are. Sometimes we feel like if I could only get there. Sometimes I feel like if I could get there faster, then I would be happy. If I could do this, then you fill in the blank. What is in that blank? If I could have this, I would go where? I would do what? I would buy what? What would make you happy if only you had it? You see, for the tortoise or for the hare, he wanted to win. And as he had that lead in the race, he thought if he stops for a little bit and he takes a nap and then he can say he also took a nap, it'll make it so much a greater win because, well, I even took a nap while you were waiting for you to catch up. Friends, this evening, as we look at this story, this poem, I like the way it brings out the idea of the hare's motivation. And as you think about your finances, and as I think about my finances, I would like you to think about the word motivation and destination. Two words tonight, motivation and destination. And so my question for you is, as we think about our finances, what is my motivation? What's motivating me to gain more? What's motivating me to earn more? What's motivating me to save? What's motivating me to spend? What is my motivation? And as I do that, as I have the resources, what is the destination that I'm trying to achieve? So in this story of the hare and the tortoise, the destination is the finish line. What's your finish line? Is it your personal happiness? Is it getting out of debt? Is it so you can go on a trip, so you can enjoy some things? Is it so you can have a pile build up so you know you don't have to worry
about future expenses, what's your destination? Is it your own personal happiness, or is it something else? Let's look at the two verses that I've been given for this evening. The verses are Proverbs 13:11 and Proverbs 21:5. And as we look at those verses, I'll read them for you. Proverbs 13:11 says, "Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase." The second verse that I got was, "The thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but everyone that is hasty only to want." Our brother this evening in the devotions talked about get-rich-quick schemes. And I believe that verse points directly to that. "But the thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but everyone that is hasty only to want." Now, as we look at this text, I think it's important for us to remember this text comes from Proverbs. Proverbs is considered a part of the Bible that we call wisdom literature. And if I know anything about your church, I'm expecting, or I kind of imagine, that you probably use Christian Light Sunday School literature. And just a couple months ago, we had a unit on Proverbs. And Proverbs, I really like Proverbs. There's so much, like there's a lot in one verse, and you start to tear it apart, and it's pretty deep. Maybe you don't. I apologize if you don't. We'll try to make this interesting for you in case you're not a Proverbs person. But Proverbs is part of the Bible that we call wisdom literature. Along with Proverbs, we have Ecclesiastes and Song of Solomon that kind of fall in that same category. And there's different types of Proverbs. I don't know if you talked about that in your Sunday school lesson of all the different styles or the different types of Proverbs. But these verses that we're going to talk tonight are called antithetical Proverbs. An antithetical proverb is one where the second line contrasts with the first, showing opposites. And that's what we see here. "Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase." We see two opposites. Antithetical proverbs are always pretty distinguishable by the word "but" in them. If they have the word "but" and you're comparing two things, it's an antithetical proverb. And so tonight, as we look at this, both of these verses have contrasts. You see the positive and the negative. And you see maybe the good side or the bad side. As we look at Proverbs, I also want you to recognize that Proverbs comes from, a lot of Proverbs are statements that are generally true. Proverbs are God's word. And so sometimes as we look at these things that are generally true, you can say, "Well, Cloyd, they're not always true." You're correct. They're not always true. So sometimes you can work hard. Sometimes you can be diligent. Sometimes you can be the positive side of both of these verses and fall on hard times. Life can bring something you didn't expect. We live in a fallen, broken world. And so Proverbs are typically generally true. And as we apply these Proverbs, we can't anticipate that they will generally also be true in our lives. Unfortunately, sometimes we look at generally true statements and we think that we are the exception. Sometimes we look at generally true statements and think that, well, yes, it's normally that way, but I think I could get away with something else. I think maybe I could, in this situation, maybe I could win big. My luck is better than that. Friends, I would like you to recognize that when we're talking about God's word, I don't want you to ever feel like you are the exception. Especially when it comes to something where it really hinges on my personal obedience. So friends, this evening, as we think about these verses, I would like to talk about planning for future needs so you can avoid loss and want. As I said before, I would also like to talk about the two words, destination and motivation. And as we think about those two words, destination and motivation, I believe it does us important to look at the application. Now, one more thing before I get too far. In Ecclesiastes, in wisdom literature, Ecclesiastes 12 says, "The words of the wise are as goads." You say, "What's that?" Yeah, I know. I said the same thing too, right? Let me read the whole verse, though. "The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the master of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd." To explain that verse to you a little bit, gives us a little bit of background. Ecclesiastes talks a lot about finances. And a goad, if I understand it right, was a long stick that a shepherd or a herdsman would have used back in biblical times with a sharp point on the end. And he took that goad or that pointed stick and he would use it to push on the back of the side of the animal to encourage them forward. As we look at wisdom literature tonight, if you feel a little poke, maybe God is nudging you forward. This is God's word, it's not my word. And as we think about wisdom literature being there to push us forward, hopefully something that is said tonight will push you forward in your Christian walk. Maybe driving you to greener pastures. Maybe driving you to more pleasant, refreshing waters that actually satisfy, as opposed to where we think we want to go on our own. And so the words of the wise are as goads, which are given from one shepherd. These are God's words given to us for our growth and our admonition. As we think about the idea of planning for future needs so you can avoid loss and want, what is your destination and what is your motivation with your finances? As we look at this, we see the opposite results of each one of these. Tonight also, as we look at these two verses, I think it's important that we interpret Scripture with Scripture. As I said already, this part of wisdom literature also includes Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes has a lot to talk about money, and in Ecclesiastes it talks about three kinds of people represented by three hands. The first hand that Ecclesiastes has to talk about is the folded hand. The folded hand in Ecclesiastes is the one that is referring to the lazy person. We all know some people like this. We've all met some people like that, and the people that would rather just fold their hands, the people that don't want to work. The next kind of hand that Ecclesiastes talks about is one hand full with contentment. Think about that a little bit. One hand full with contentment. And then the third hand that Ecclesiastes talks about is two hands full chasing the wind. Did you ever have something in your hands and you tried to grab something else? When I was a boy, my family was on a trip. We stopped in at this cute little ice cream shop, I think it was off the end of 104. And as we went to this little ice cream shop, my dad ordered some cones for each of us for the end of our meal. So I was there in line with him. And these cones were that big, they had to tip them sideways to get them out of the serving window. Pretty impressive. I mean, talk about a Mennonite going out for ice cream, you got some value. I was happy. And so as I held this ice cream cone, one for me and one for my brother, whoever built the cone obviously had made a difference in size. And there I was, my two hands are full, and my dad makes a comment, which one are you going to give to your brother? And in my greed, I said, I'm going to give him this one. And as I nudged my hand forward, that big, tall cone started to fall back on my arm. And in a haste to grab it, I went like this, and bloop, there went the second one right on the ground. So now we have two damaged cones, one laying on my arm and the other one on the ground. So what happens? When you have two hands full and you're chasing the wind, you really don't get as much as you think you're going to get. You sometimes even lose what you already have, trying to get more, trying to get more. Two hands full chasing the wind. And so as we think about these three kinds of hands, I ask you tonight, which one represents your life? I think there's a reason Ecclesiastes only suggests three kinds of hands. Because I think there's really only three kinds of people. Which one represents your life? It was sobering to me as I took time to reflect on which ones probably most represent mine. So friends, what are our motives for our finances? As we continue on, in Ecclesiastes, if you were to look at it from a big picture point, my question is, what is the motive for your wealth? Unfortunately, there's three main things that often motivate our drive for money. Because money tends to promise us a lot of things. Money promises you pleasure, it promises you accumulation, and it promises us status. And sometimes I think if I could have more, I could gain these things. What is driving my desire for more? However, on the flip side of that, I want to be clear too. As we think about these ideas of pleasure, accumulation, and status, they're not all wrong in and of themselves. You see, pleasure is not wrong. I'm imagining that what you had for dinner tonight was tasty. You see, if food didn't taste good, we wouldn't have a desire to eat it. On top of that, as we look out at the beautiful fresh snowfall, as we wait for spring and see those new flowers popping up through the ground, it's beautiful. God has beauty built into creation everywhere. Pleasure. Pleasure, if you will. There's pleasure built into creation. So God is not against pleasure. But when pleasure becomes what I specifically pursue, it becomes a problem. The same deal. Accumulation, right? Is accumulation wrong? Well, store not up treasure for yourself where moth and rust doth corrupt, where thieves break through and steal. But you know, if I have a future need, I'm foolish not to save for that need. And then status. There's status. There's kings, there's servants, there's bosses, there's employees and workers. And that brings some element of status in society. Even in the Bible, we're told that whoever, you know, takes away from the Bible and teaches things, or does not teach everything that the Bible says, will be least in the kingdom of heaven. But he that teaches the littlest thing and does it will be greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Even in eternity, there's going to be some level of status. So I don't believe that God is opposed to these things. But when these things become the driving factor of my heart, when that is what I am pursuing and going after, I believe we have to question, what is my motive? On the flip side of our motive for wealth, I believe our motive should be to glorify God. And as we glorify God, I think the key thing we can remember is how we glorify God is by obeying his predetermined rules. God has given us rules for how we handle money. And if I'm able to obey his predetermined rules, then I'm going to bring him honor and glory. We have spiritual treasure. It's another thing that is talked about in the Bible. And then we have stewarding. Friends, what does stewardship mean to you? Am I a steward of the wealth that God has entrusted to me? Do I remember the fact that I'm a steward, or how many times do I think that I'm an owner? You see, I like to think that the money in my pocket is mine. Do you feel any different about the cash in your wallet or the money in your church benevolence fund? And how it gets used. You see, the reality is, yes, you might not be able to touch the money in the benevolence fund after you put it in the plate. Probably the deacon has access to that. But the reality is the money in the church account and the money in your wallet is all God's. Does it make a difference to me how I view it and how I use it? Do I recognize that I am a steward of what he's been given to me? Now, to talk back to our verses again. As we think about these ideas of wealth gotten quickly, I would like to look at the application of this. What is the application of wealth gotten quickly? Well, it says that wealth gotten by vanity will be diminished, or the wealth gotten hastily will be lost, or you'll come to want. As we think about wealth gotten quickly or by vanity, this is often driven by somebody who's maybe somewhat naive, rash, or propelled by selfish desire. As we think about this idea of getting money quick, as was brought up before tonight, the idea of get-rich-quick schemes. What is driving that? What is that drive? What is driving somebody to get rich quick? What is driving somebody to gamble? What is driving somebody to play the lottery? A lot of times, it's either that they don't want to work, they want to experience accumulation, and have lots of wealth set aside, or they want to experience pleasure. Those are often the motivations behind getting rich quick. It's often propelled by selfish desires. As we think about this, you might say, well, I don't play the lottery. That's not me. I'm not part of that. But what about maybe even a pyramid scheme, where your goal is to build a lot of people under you so you don't have to work? What about the idea of some other get-rich-quick scheme where you think that, you know, if only I can invest here, then maybe I'll be set for the rest of my life? Friends, you know, you've all heard it said, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And I know people who've embraced financial things, had financial opportunities to invest, and in a couple months or a couple weeks when things started to unfold, they were crying because they had lost it all. It looked too good to be true. Well, maybe you say, well, that's not me. I've been trained. I know what to do. I'm a lot better at handling finances than that. I hope so. I hope you are. But what about the idea of excessive overtime? You see, for myself, right when I was newly married, my number one financial goal was to get out of debt. Get out of debt on my house. Now, most times, houses are the long game. Most times, houses are, you know, 10, 20, 30, even 40-year mortgages. I don't know where yours is set at. But my number one goal was to get out of debt. I wanted to experience financial freedom. That's biblical, right? In my goal to get there, I do not feel like I always treated my wife properly in relation to our finances. It created stress. And I feel like I even hindered her ability to have the freedom to spend. It made her second guess her spending. It made her, and she's not a spender by nature. My wife is very good at that. I mean, she's frugal. She's not a waster. And she was on board with helping me achieve my dreams, but I think I paralyzed her in her spending because my goals were overambitious. I wanted to get there too fast. You see, sometimes in our goal to get to our financial, in our efforts to get to our financial goal too fast, we end up maybe putting in excessive overtime. We end up not relating to our family correctly. We maybe don't treat someone else lovingly. We maybe don't give as much as we should to the offering. The list can go on. And you know, as we maybe as men put in that excessive overtime, we don't recognize that we're actually losing our family. He that is hasty will experience want. What about my relationship with my wife? I don't think I realized that in my haste to achieve my financial goals, it was hurting our marriage. We talk about it now. I feel like God has been working in my heart. He's been redeeming that. But what is driving my desire to get more money? For some people, it's wishing for their ship to come in. Maybe they're just waiting on a big inheritance. And like we heard tonight, we sometimes forget that we are heirs to Daddy's money. Friends, as we think about this idea of amassing more wealth, we forget that God works through processes, not impulses. I have a friend who's currently struggling with some incredible credit card debt, and it's weighing heavily on him. And I would love to see him be able to do plastic surgery and cut those cards up and get out of debt, get a budget, get some way to fix his problems. I would love if maybe even, there's part of me that would like to help him out. But even if I gave him the money to pay off his credit card, it still would not change his spending habits. And what he has to experience is the pain of that debt load that makes him buckle down and change his spending habits. And hopefully as that happens, God can reveal to him what's driving his spending habits from his heart. Budgets are good. They help us maybe make good choices, but your budget still does not control your heart. Friends, we've all heard the saying, easy come, easy go. And as we think about this idea of getting rich quick, as we think about this idea of getting a lot of wealth, did you stop and think about how most times that easy come, easy go will often apply? It takes a very strong person to get a large amount of money and not blow it. And that habit is built in scarcity, not in abundance. Friends, what is gained without process is often lost without purpose. I don't know how many of you have had the experience as a child, but for myself, growing up, my parents gardened. And much to my dismay, on some wonderful summer days in the middle of school vacation, my mom would say, "We're doing beans today." That's a good way to ruin a young boy's day. Anybody agree? You been there? All right. It's a rough day. And you know, my parents had a pretty big garden, and I'll be honest, it felt like it took the whole day. Even if it was only a little past lunchtime, it was a long time sitting on the side porch snipping beans. But you know, it was one bean at a time. And it wasn't until I got older, it wasn't until maybe later in the year when Mom pulled those beans out of the freezer and she said, "This is why we did that." And even then, it doesn't sink in until, you know, maybe you finally run out of beans and it's not quite gardening time yet, and she starts to buy some vegetables from the store, and you realize that there's a difference. And you're like, oh, this is why we do it. You see, some things come from the process. And you learn to stick out a job. You learn to be diligent. You learn to apply yourself. Friends, as we think about getting rich quick, is financial disorder in our lives just carelessness? Or is it a sign that there are areas of our life where we have not allowed God to rule? What's driving my desire to get rich quick? Rush often reveals anxiety, not faith. So many times, as we look at getting rich quick, it actually comes from maybe our poor spending habits. Maybe God has already provided, and we just need to save what He's already given us. And maybe sometimes we're just looking for the gratification now. We're not willing to wait for it. Some people who have this desire to get rich quick are the ones that need that instant gratification. And they ended up maxing themselves out to the point where they're actually wearing a financial snorkel. And they're almost in the water with a snorkel to breathe out, and as soon as a wave comes in, they're brought under. Unfortunately, I had a friend like that who, he had a really nice house. His wife, it was his fourth marriage, unfortunately. And his wife, he wanted to buy her a new car to keep her happy. And he had himself maxed to the gills. And he had just a couple unfortunate financial downturns along the way. And it was so bad that when his furnace gave out, he didn't have the money to fix his furnace, had to sell the house, buy a new house, and in the whole process, he got a smaller, more rundown property, and now his payments are the same because he lost his good interest rate as well. Why? He needed the instant gratification. What's driving my desire? Why do I think I need more? Now, to the application on the positive side, it says, "He that gathereth by labor shall increase." This idea of labor is a little bit of sweat equity. This idea of labor is working hard. This idea of labor says shall increase. It's the idea of labor, hard work, and diligence. Friends, the only ones in life who make money work in a mint. The rest of us must earn it. You see, even if you buy a property with a gold mine on it, you still have to mine it. Sometimes we think, oh, if I had a gold mine, that'd be great. No, you still have to mine it. And yes, I want to tell you tonight that money does grow on trees. They call that an orchard. And if you have an orchard, you know it's a lot of work. My neighbor has an orchard. And one summer, they had extra cherries that were not getting picked in time. It was a really moist time of year, and if they don't get them picked fast enough, they were going to split. So they invited some neighbors to come over. They said, "We'll pay you to pick cherries. They're going to pay us by the pound." And it sounded good. But you ever pick cherries by the pound? They don't add up that quick. And I felt really bad after the fact, because what I didn't know is, like, I'm there, like, grabbing handfuls of cherries and putting them in the box. But he wanted the stem on the cherries, because with the stem on, they'll keep much longer than without the stem. So as I say that, I'm saying it takes work. It takes diligence. And increase doesn't happen by itself. It happens slowly over time. The idea of these verses also gives the idea of the thoughts of diligence. It's planning ahead. It's thinking into the future. It's the idea of planning brings the idea of wisdom and maturity. And young people here tonight, if you don't know it already, start planning for the future. Because you're not always going to live under mom and dad's roof. I hope it doesn't come as a surprise to you, but they're not going to always pay your bills for you. There's a day coming where you have to pay for your own bills. Plan for the future. Are there small ways that you can save for the future? The other ideas that come from these verses are being educated on how to handle money. We are blessed to have teaching on handling money. And I think we need to be a little bit careful that it doesn't get driven by consumerism and just personal pleasure, but learn how to handle money. Learn good tips. Learn good tools. Friends, once again, what is gained without process is often lost without purpose. You see, when you get a bunch of money, it's easy to think about those things you could buy. I have a friend that way back in, I think about 2008 or something, we got one of those government stimulus packages, and where they sent everybody like $300. Well, I don't know what you did when you got government stimulus money, but in talking to friends, right, the topic came up one time, and my one friend told me, he's like, yeah, I think I spent mine three times already. You what? You spend it three times? That's exactly what they wanted you to do. That's exactly what you wanted to do. What was gained without process was lost without purpose. You see, so many times I think it's sometimes hard for parents to pass on family businesses because dad knows what sweat equity went into it. He knows what the blood, sweat, and tears that had to make it happen. And he sees a son tearing down this addition to build something else or not valuing this investment, and the list goes on. Because what's gained without process is lost without purpose. My first new bike was one that I had saved for many months. My dad was really good at having some summer projects for my brother and I. And my one summer project one time was having a strawberry patch. So we had to weed it for several months while school was still going. And then just about the time where school's letting out, strawberries are coming into season. And so for the first couple weeks of summer vacation, my brother and I are picking strawberries and we're setting them out by the road. And it's always fun watching the cars slow down and people turn in the drive and put some money in the little box. And as soon as the strawberries are all gone, we'll run out and get the money. And it was a good summer project for my brother and I. But one summer, I wanted to buy a bike. And so I started saving my strawberry money. And I've been dreaming about a bike for a long time. And at that age in life, I was dreaming about a bike with shocks in the front and shocks in the back. And the more I thought about it and the more I looked at this bike magazine that I had from the local bike shop, the more I wanted that bike. And so I saved, and I saved hard. And I talked to some friends, and I heard people tell me about which bike shop they would go to. And finally the day came where my dad took me to the bike shop to go buy a brand new bike. And as we go to the bike shop, I had two limiting factors. The first limiting factor was my criteria for the bike. It needed to have shocks. And I had already given up on shocks on the front and back. I was just, if it had shocks on the front, that was going to be good enough. But the other limiting factor was how much strawberry money I had saved. We started walking around the bike shop, and it didn't take me long to realize that most of them were out of my price range. So I'm walking around looking at these bikes, and my dad goes upstairs to the second floor and found something on the discount line that fit both the criteria. He said, Cloyd, I think I found your bike for you. We got up there, and it's this ugly, purplish maroon bike with yellow shocks. There is nothing about it that really would have attracted me, except it fit both criteria. And we went home a happy boy that night. I got a brand new bike, and it fit my two needs. And I took care of that bike. I greased those shocks. I parked it. I didn't want it to get scratched. I rode it. I had a lot of fun with that bike. And I took care of that bike for a couple years. But a couple years later, there at the feed mill where my dad worked, we had this customer whose son worked for a Goodwill. And this Goodwill got so many free bikes that they would load them on the back of her pickup and bring them out to Amish country for the people to ride, because they knew that people traveled on bikes in our area and they wanted to just give them away. And so there at the feed mill, we had a lot of those clientele, and she's like, here, you can have these bikes if you give them away. And so whenever she came, it was like Christmas, and I'd go out and help her unload the bike. And after a while, bikes became disposable. And all of a sudden, my bike that I worked hard for, I didn't care so much about, because I could get a bike with with shocks in the front and back. And if something happened to that bike, maybe a couple months later, I could trade it in for something else that I liked better. You see why? Something that was gained without process was lost without purpose. I took care of it when I realized what I had to do for it, but after a while, I started getting free bikes, and I didn't take care of them the same anymore. When you work for something, you value it more. This affects multiple areas of your life. What about your marriage? Are you willing to work for it? If you do, you're going to probably value it more. What about, who knows, fill in the blank. When you work for something, you value it more. Friends, character is not formed in abundance, but it's shown in scarcity. Can we embrace the idea of process over instant gratification? I believe that's what these verses allude to. One more thing as we look at these ideas of these verses, I believe we can also pull out the idea of being diligent in our finances. And so I ask you the question, am I faithful in little? I believe it's in Ecclesiastes as well, where it talks about the little foxes that spoil the vine. You know what I mean by little foxes that spoil the vine? Back in the Bible times, they had vineyards, and little foxes would run around, and they'd nip at the fresh little buds. And while a fresh little bud doesn't seem like much, as they nipped at those vines, as they nipped out the buds, if you weren't careful, you could lose your vineyard because of the little foxes. One little sprout at a time. What about your finances? You know, sometimes I think people feel the need to gain more money because they're not diligent and faithful with the little bit they have. I don't know where you're at. Hopefully you're a saver. If you are, good. But tonight I'd like to ask you a question. Is $3.50 a lot of money? Yes or no? Is $3.50 a lot of money? I don't know about you, but $3.50 is maybe half the price of a specialty coffee. Most of us don't have a problem stopping for one of those. They're actually pretty good, by the way, right? I do enjoy them, okay? Not saying you can't enjoy a specialty coffee. For young guys or maybe somebody who's driving late at night, how about an energy drink or a Red Bull or a Monster? They spend on those $4 or $5, no problem, right? I see kids drinking them every day, one a day, more than that maybe, chugging them down. Is $3.50 a lot of money? Obviously not, right? They're spending more than that. I see people running into the mini market mart to grab their lunches. I see them going to Sheetz, you know, Sheetz run and done, right? We're going to make it happen. I didn't have time to pack lunch. Before you know it, you're spending $25 on your lunch. I don't know. Those numbers get big quick. But is $3.50 a lot of money? $3.50 per day comes out to $104. Is $104 a lot of money? Let me show you this chart. At $3.50 a day, or $104 a month, if you were to invest it at 8.5% compounded interest, compounded monthly, from the time you were 18 to the time you were 40, you would have $79,955.21. Now you say, whoa, whoa, Cloyd, where can I get $8.5% interest? If you invest in stocks, you can easily achieve that. Actually, it's a very conservative number if you're investing in stocks. Now, I don't know where you're at with investing in stocks. That's another conversation. You can talk about that as a church yourselves, right? But that's a very conservative number if you were to invest. And if you do invest, I do encourage you to find a financial advisor that you trust, because there are ways to have people invest in businesses that align with your values and you're not investing in things that don't align with our values. Does that make sense? But for the sake of this conversation, $3.50 is $104 a month. At 8.5% interest compounded monthly from the time you're 18 to the time you're 40 is $79,955. How many of you would be happy to have $79,955 handed to you? It would feel good, right? I don't think it matters where you're at on the financial spectrum. That's a decent amount of money. Maybe it's a lot of money. Now, let's add 10 years to that figure. 10 years to that figure, that same $3.50 becomes $206,073.69. $200,000. It's almost a quarter million. Now, let's add 10 more years. If you were to save that from the time you're 18 until the time you're 60, you'd have over $500,000. So I ask the question again, is $3.50 a lot of money? You know the hare and the tortoise? The tortoise plodded along. He dealt with what he was already given. And he did his best. And he won the race. Once again, finances is not a race. Once again, the goal is not just accumulation. But when I look at these figures, all of a sudden $3.50 feels like a lot more money when you think about drinking it away. It's a coffee a day. So, now before I go off the rails on just saving, before I go off the rails on making it all about having more, I would like to ask yourself, maybe you're not into investing. Maybe you're not into building a big pile, and that's great, right? The Bible has a lot to say about storing up treasure where moth and rust doth corrupt, right? Not worrying about the future. God is concerned about us putting our trust in Him, not trusting our wealth. But as I think about money, there's one story I'd like to bring to our attention yet, and that's the story of the shrewd steward. Now maybe you say, what does that story really mean? I've pondered that too. My best conclusion for that story is you have the shrewd steward who has a master. He has a job. And he knows that his time at that job is limited. He's not going to stay there forever. And so he quickly starts to make friends with the debtors of his boss. He says, take your bill and cut it in half, and I'll mark it as paid. You see, he knew his time was limited, and he was preparing for the future. How many times in this life do I forget that I'm not here forever? I'm preparing for the future. Are my finances a way that I prepare for the future? Do I handle my money in such a way that I am storing up treasure in heaven? Am I more worried about making friends for my future life than I am about enjoying life here and now? You see, the shrewd steward wasn't commended as much for what he did, but the way he could plan ahead and the way he used the time now to his advantage in the future. What if that $3.50 a day, instead of spending it on that drink or something you don't need, what if it went in the offering plate? I'm going to guess that God could get more interest than 8.5%. And you know, maybe someday, if you do start putting that $3.50 towards kingdom work, you'll be surprised at your reward in heaven. Because little things over time build up. Do I think about the little things in life, the relationships I'm building, the investments that I'm making for the kingdom? Maybe you have money figured out. Hopefully you do. Am I making investments in the kingdom, whether big or small? Am I looking to the future? Am I planning ahead? Can I see beyond the here and the now? Can I see past my instant pleasure, recognizing that there is greater pleasure ahead of me? Friends, we want to talk about planning for future needs so you can avoid loss and want. You know the ones that say, when saw we thee a hungered? When saw we thee naked? And Jesus says, depart from me. They experienced want. They experienced loss. But there was also that other group of people that Jesus said, I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. And they said, when did we do it? He said, well, it was when you did it to that person. It's when you showed love to that individual. Enter into the joy of your reward. Friends, this past spring, I lost my father-in-law. And as a couple days after he passed, my mother-in-law, who lives next door to us, was looking out her window and she saw his truck. And she called my wife up and said, would you mind moving Daddy's truck because I can't stand to look at it? My wife said, yeah, I'll do that for you. So she goes out and jumps in his truck. And as she turns on the radio, this song came on. A very simple phrase in the song. The song said, we might be here for now, but don't forget where we're going. I believe God allowed that song to be playing at that time, or he allowed my wife to get in the truck at that time. It felt like a God moment. And that song spoke to her, and that song spoke to me, and I played that song over and over again ever since he died. But as I think about that phrase, how many times do I forget where I am going? I think I can take a nap under the tree like the hare. I think if I just kick back for a little bit, it'll all be okay, and I lose sight of the end goal. We might be here for now, but don't forget where we're going. And you know what? It was in the several months that followed that I sold his trucks. I sold his equipment. He didn't take any of that with him. And as people went through the viewing line, they weren't talking about his properties, his investments. What people cared about and what God cares about is what we're doing for the kingdom. We might be here for now, but don't forget where we're going. If my treasure is only immediate, my realities will eventually become a dream rather than my dream becoming reality. In the Bible, we have the verse that says, "Why spend money on what is not bread?" You see, God calls us to take care of our needs. God gives us resources to take care of ours. And how many times, how would my spending change if I realized that the money that I'm given is God's? It's allowed to be used for his purposes. And by the way, while you handle it for God, you can use it to meet your needs. Do I look at it like that, or do I look at mine, and then, oh, God gets a little bit of it? Friends, we cannot separate the physical and the spiritual. Life happens at the intersection of the physical and the spiritual. These roads overlap, and it's not where you're at on these roads, but which direction you're headed. Where are you going with your finances? What is your destination? Friends, we are always being ruled by something. We are always being disappointed by something. We are always celebrating something. We are always running after or away from something. We are always confused by something, and we are always trying to figure something out. And the interconnectedness of it all means that nothing in our lives lives in isolation. Do you get mad over money? Do you get excited over money? Those feelings can sometimes help us understand what's motivating us and what's driving us. Friends, every investment, every financial decision, and every savings can be an act of worship. You say, whoa, I just paid a heating bill. How's that an act of worship? I'm taking care of my family's needs. Do I recognize that as being a faithful steward to embrace the role of life that I'm in and meet the needs of the family that God has given me? Friends, I'm either worshiping myself or God. Can I look at my heart and my motives? Money exposes me to blessing and to danger. Education of finances is important. Budgeting is important. Saving and giving are important. But as I evaluate my motive behind how I handle money, am I willing to ask God to be honest with what is ruling my heart? You see, budgets are good. Budgets are tools. And that maybe as you budget, you end up with a surplus. The question is, what are you going to do with the surplus once your budget creates one? All of a sudden, I can spend it on myself? Just because I have the money means I can? Something to ask yourself. God knows, friends, how greedy and selfish I really am. He knows my resolution and resolve to do better. He knows my desire to serve him, but he also knows how I'm constantly drawn away by the allures of the world. He knows how I'm drawn away by the pleasure, the accumulation, and the status that money often offers me. And his grace is there to help. Can I run to him for grace as I think about my finances? He's waiting for me to run to him and allow him to redeem my finances. Abundance without purpose is dangerous. It can tempt, distract, and steal peace. But it also can be a blessing and a testimony and a vehicle of God's grace to other people. In closing, I want to ask you these two questions. What is your destination with your money? Is it your personal happiness? Or is it God's glory? And what is motivating you? Is it things like accumulation, pleasure, and those kind of things, status? Or is it motivation by another kingdom? Maybe one that we don't always see, and sometimes we lose sight of. Friends, finances is more than numbers, but it's about impact and service to God and his big plan. When your resources have purpose, they become tools for service, not channels of selfishness and pride. I have two sayings I'd like to read to you yet. The one is by A.W. Tozer, the American pastor and writer. He said, "A base thing as money often is, Yet it can be transmuted into everlasting treasure. It can be converted into food for the hungry and clothing for the poor. It can keep a missionary actively winning lost men to the light of the gospel and thus transmute itself into heavenly values. Any temporal possession can be turned into everlasting wealth. Whatever is given to Christ is immediately touched with immorality. And then Selwyn Hughes says, remember this, you can't serve God in money, but you can serve God with money. Friends, tonight, I would like you to look at your finances. Am I planning for future needs? And in doing so, if you are, you can avoid loss and want. May God bless you as you continue to serve him in your lives with your resources. Let's bow our heads for a word of prayer. Dear Father in heaven, we come before you thanking you for the way that you have blessed us. You've given us way more than we need. And God, for myself, it's easy for me to want more. It's easy for me to try to think of ways that I can get more and not be content. God, I pray that you'd help me to be faithful what you've given me, recognizing that you can make me rich or you can make me poor. And God, help me to bring you glory in whatever state I am in. Help me to take active steps if I need to change my spending habits. Help me to take active steps if I need me to give more. Help me to take active steps if money is ruling my heart in a way that it shouldn't be. God, I pray that you bless this congregation here. Bless them as they continue to serve you. Thank you for the way they are a light in this community. And just thank you for the gifts and talents you have blessed them with. Help them to use them for your kingdom. In your name we pray. Amen.